special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on, folks? You're here live on Blog Talk Radio through the Go Long Media channel. And this is the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohard Truth on Sports. Once again, that's the Cohard Truth on Sports. You could go to the website, thechtonsports.com, or follow on Facebook, the Cohard Truth on Sports. You could also go into social media for the Boxing Source Radio Show. Our social media handle is The Boxing Source through Instagram. On Twitter, it's Boxing Source 2. And you could find us on Facebook, just looking up The Boxing Source. We have a pretty full show today. Pretty much going to go. I'm going to push for a 90-minute live session here on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Have like a full, about to see if I could go through a few things here that's coming up. Over the course of the week. We have like a triple header that's going on in Carson, California. Commonly named Superfly, because of the three major fights that are on that particular card. All of them are in the super flyweight division, so that's why I guess the promoter there named it Superfly. It's going to be under K2 Promotions, Tom Loeffler. Alongside Taken Promotions and Salida Promotions as well, with the a few other fights that are going to be on the undercard, including Brian Viloria against Miguel Cartagena. Three feature bouts that'll be on there that'll be shown on HBO on Saturday night. You're going to have the WBC Super Flyweight title on the line, and you're going to have the WBO Super Flyweight title on the line, and plus another fight that's going to feature two other Super Flyweights that are fairly among the top in that particular division. So you have Carlos Quadras going up against Juan Francisco Estrada, and it may be the co-feature, or it may be, just a step below the co-feature. They're both, Estrada and Quadras are the top two guys within the WBC rankings there below what's going to happen in the WBC Super Flyweight Championship fight in that same card. And a lot of people, see that These two guys are, you know, within the top four or five. You have Estrada there, ranked at number three in the WBC, but it's also the number one guy there in the WBO, going up against, you know, Carlos Quadras, who's there at number two. And, you know, what's notable with Carlos Quadras is that he had a unanimous decision loss against Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez over in the Forum back in 2016. So he was able to get a decision win in on March 18th of this year. And now he goes up against Juan Francisco Estrada there. This pretty much will probably see who is the going to be the number one contender depending on how the main event goes. Next up, you have that WBO super flyweight title. Antonio Nieves is going up against the WBO super flyweight champion, Arya Inoue. This is pretty much a something to feature Inoue, I would say, because he's had, you know, a lot of pretty much every one of his fights over in Japan. So this is going to be his United States debut. Going up against Antonio Nieves, who, you know, had his last fight in March 10th, you know, over in Detroit and lost a split decision for a, you know, the minor bantamweight championship. So he's going from bantamweight to super flyweight here. So he's moving down in weight to take on Kyoya Inoue, who, you know, has been highly touted, highly regarded. Only there at 13-0, but has been, you know, very popular in Japan. Has like a, you know, couple of wins, key wins there, in the super flyweight division, including Koyai Kono, won that by TKO, but he was, you know, former light flyweight champ holder and moved up to from light flyweight to super flyweight to win the WBO super flyweight title. And that was in 2014, and he's defended it, you know, since then, going up against Antonio Nieves here. So, I mean, this is going to be a feature fight for Naoya Inoue. I think he's, you know, pretty much a heavy favorite here against Antonio Nieves. Now, I just wanted to get into that main event that's coming up there. This is the rematch there for that WBC version of the Super Flyweight Championship, as you're going to have Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez try to avenge his only loss that he's had in his career against Swissaket Sorungvisai, or as some would say, Zach Skill Wangek there. So, you know, they have the fight over in the Madison Square Garden, you know, on March 18th there. That was, you know, the co-feature for Gennady Golovkin against Daniel Jacobs. And it was a very rough and tough fight for, you know, Chocolatito Gonzalez. He was cut in that particular fight. Still was able to, you know, throw, still was able to do what he was doing in his previous fights, being very active and whatnot. But it wasn't enough at that point. Went to the scorecards, and, you know, Sorungvisai ended up winning that fight by majority decision. The scores were 2-114-112 and 113-113 for Sorungvisai. So we're going to see if Gonzalez is going to get his rematch or revenge here in this particular matchup. But looks like that particular card is going to be a very, very good card on HBO that people should be able to catch and check out. Just getting in a call right here. Let's see, area code 205. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James? It's Mike Grady. How you doing, man?
Doing good there, Mike. Doing good. You know, putting it out, you know, the announcement about what's going on September 9th, you know, with that card over in Carson, California, named Superfly, specifically because of the three fights in the Superflyweight division. They have the thing there with Inoue defending this title. The Sorung Vasai, Roman Gonzalez rematch. And you have Juan Francisco Estrada against Carlos Cuadra. So I would say two of those three fights are going to be, you know, really good, you know, off the top. I think, you know, in a way, supposedly will blow out Nieves. I mean, Nieves is coming off a loss and moving down in weight to take on this challenge. So what are a couple of things that you're looking for in these particular feature fights that are going to be on HBO?
What am I looking forward to? I mean, I'm looking forward to the Chocolatito rematch. Maybe he'll handle the fight differently. I guess we'll see if he is capable of handling the fight differently, and if that will bode well for him. Because, you know, Soren Sungai, whatever his name, he's a pressure fighter, if I remember correctly. Like, he was putting a lot of pressure on Chocolatito, and
yeah,
it'd just be interesting to see how he takes this differently.
Yeah, it was just a real rough fight, you know, for Chocolatito Gonzalez there. I mean, you had the accidental headbutt in round three there that caused the cut to the right eye. But they were able to, you know, continue that particular fight there. But then, you know, in round six, Wangak was able to get a point taken away in that sixth round because a second headbutt that, you know, was deemed as intentional. So that ended up giving Gonzalez a 10-8 round, unofficially up to that point. But even with that, he still was able to, you know, have the majority decision on two of those judges' scorecards. I mean, he basically had that 2-114-112s, and, you know, with that 1 point taken off, he still was able to, you know, have a majority of those rounds over Chocolatito Gonzalez. So it was just, you know, like a pretty much a hard fight, you know, a phone booth type of fight, just in there, in close, a lot of punches being thrown and all of that. So, you know, we're pretty much going to expect the same in this particular matchup.
And I don't know. Wasn't Soren C, what's his dude name again?
I just go Sorung Vasai.
Sorung Vasai. So Sorung Vasai, he was hitting him with some big shots too, right? Like buffing him.
Well, he caught him with a couple of good shots, yeah. But I don't know if it was like something that could, you know, really seriously have stunned Gonzalez in that point. I think the thing with that, you know, with those two headbutts, it just really affected Gonzalez for that second half of that fight.
Oh, yeah. I think I sort of remember him using his head. But, yeah, I guess it's interesting to see now, since they don't have that whole narrative of, like, boosting him up prematurely and, you know, falsely boosting him up to this world's greatest fighter. Like, it'll be interesting to see the narrative now, since they can't play that narrative. I mean, of course they're going to say he got cheated, obviously, but since he's not this invincible Superman, how will they go about, you know, commentating this fight? I'm interested to see. I mean, other than the obvious, he got cheated, but yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be the other thing about, you know, that particular main event is that, you know, how the HBO commentators are going to view or kind of like narrate the fight. There because of what happened in the first one with, you know, the headbutts that, you know, really affected Gonzalez. And that, you know, it wasn't like something that it was like a phone booth type of fight, like I said, but, you know, they kind of like narrated it to where it kind of like didn't seem, you know, all too well for Gonzalez in that particular case. And so they tried to, you know, push it or narrate it towards Gonzalez being, you know, the guy that had this particular record, you know, 46 straight wins or whatever it was. And, you know, being they were trying to, you know, boost him as the top pound for pound fighter in the sport, you know, even though he was, you know, just there at, you know, light flyweight, minimum weight, and what is it? Actually, he's had like, I would say about four world titles in four divisions. So I think that's why they were trying to, you know, boost him up as, you know, being the, you know, number one guy, pound for pound in their list or whatever it was. But, you know, being on HBO kind of like swayed their decision a lot. So here, I just wonder if he's going to be able to, you know, make any adjustments to, you know, kind of beat Sorung Vasai in this rematch.
Yeah, that's interesting to see, because he definitely, I mean, I haven't critiqued him on a realistic level enough to know if he has multiple dimensions, but so far, from what I can see, he's just all offense, and, you know, it's not very many layers to him. Like, yeah, he in front of the eight ball, but when he behind the eight ball, you know, like, I mean, I know those headbutts did take a lot out of him. And, I mean, that definitely changed the course of a fight. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see, like you said, can he make adjustments? You know, is he only just this one-style fighter? And if so, there definitely will be a fighter that will chop him down a lot. Anyway, I mean, it was a good fight. Don't get me wrong, but it'll be a fighter like, you know, Nito Denier and Nicholas Walters who he'll get chopped down like that. You know, it'll be some fight where he – gets dismantled if that's all he is just all offense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I'm, you know, also looking for. If he's, you know, able to, if he's just like an all offense type of fighter, then, you know, he'll be open to a lot of shots like he was actually in that first fight. I mean, even with those, you know, headbutts affecting him or whatnot, he was still, you know, getting tagged a little bit here and there. So it wasn't like something where, you know, he could have, like, you know, blown away a Sorung Vasai or anything like that. He's been, you know, he's been open to, you know, a few hits here and there. He had that in the Quadras fight. And I think he had that in the fight against, I think it was Brian Valoria, not the one after that against McWilliams Arroyo, because Arroyo was just something there where, I mean, it was like a tough type of fight. Arroyo was fairly good, but I think that, you know, Valoria was able to, you know, go toe-to-toe with him as well. So that's the thing that I'm looking there with Wangak. If he's still, you know, there to trade with Roman Gonzalez, I think that's what the issue is there with Gonzalez, is that he hasn't expected like other fighters to, you know, go toe to toe with him, you know, since he's, you know, had the fights against Quadras and here with us on Sorung Vasai. I mean, a lot of the fights that he's had, especially, you know, from, you know, 2012 on up, he's pretty much like knocked out his opponents. So once he's like stepped up here to the super flyweight division, he hasn't really carried that, you know, power behind him like he did in the lower weights. What about the other fights here? The one with Nairia Inoue, and then the Quadras, that Quadras versus Estrada fight.
I've seen Quadras fight before, but I don't know enough about the opponent to know how well the match will be. And anyway, definitely they try to boost him up too. And, you know, I mean, it's difficult to know who's actually a good fighter because of their propaganda. It's really difficult, like, to trust who's really a good fighter. You know, I just don't know. But, I mean, the way they big up him and say he's knocking people out and just juggernaut, I mean, I'd be interested to watch because of that narrative. But I'd have to see him over a prolonged period of time, get more data points before I believe the hype, you know, because they full of hype.
Yeah, and, you know, here with Quadras, I mean, he was, like, almost, you know, kind of like following that little blueprint of what Chocolatito Gonzalez was. I mean, you know, up until 2016, he was, you know, undefeated. But, you know, in this case, he only had that one world title in that super flyweight division at. So he was a WBC super flyweight champion, you know, and then he went up against, you know, Chocolatito Gonzalez, who at the time was, you know, flyweight champion for the WBC before he moved up to face Quadras. And, you know, that's where, you know, we had that, you know, back and forth fight between those two, you know, where Gonzalez, you know, ended up getting the better of him and winning by unanimous decision. But here, you know, going up against Estrada, who, you know, was another guy that is still, you know, within those lower weight classes. He's, you know, been the flyweight champion. He had a shot at the light flyweight championship, but he also lost to Chocolatito Gonzalez, and that fight was back in 2012. So he went up to flyweight, you know, after that, and ended up winning the WBA and WBO of flyweight championships there, and ended up defending them a few times here. But, you know, it's like you were saying, you know, with a lot of these guys here on the lower weights, you know, the flyweights, bantamweights, super bantamweights, and on below, you really don't see that much of, you know, these fights, because a lot of them are, you know, in other countries. They're in, you know, they're in Mexico, Japan, you know, also like in Honduras or, you know, Puerto Rico and things like that. So you might not see them, you know, being featured in a lot of these networks here, major networks here in the States. And it would be very tough for you to find some of the videos of these guys' fights. So, you know, here with, you know, with Juan Francisco Estrada, I mean, I'm not sure if he's, you know, had, you know, fights there in the super flyweight division. You know, he's had a couple of them, but, you know, he just recently, you know, moved up to super flyweight here, you know, a couple fights ago. So, I mean, it's like he's, they put him up there in, like, number two, I think, in the WBC, number three in the WBC, and, you know, he's, like, number one in the WBO, because, you know, when he was at flyweight, he was a WBO flyweight champion, so with him moving up at the time, that put him as, you know, among the top there in the WBO rankings. But this fight here against Quadras, I'm not sure, because... Like I was saying, Estrada has had a string of wins here since his loss to Chocolatito Gonzalez, you know, including wins over Brian Viloria, who I think is going to be part of this card too. If I'm checking the full card, yeah. But yeah, Viloria is going to be part of this card as well. So I just think, yeah, that's going to be a fairly toss-up fight back and forth. I think it's going to be up in the air just like the main event there. But on the other one there with Inoue against Nieves, like I was saying, Inoue is just having his first fight here in the United States, so that, you know, a lot of people in the United States will be able to see him, you know, over in Carson, California, the StubHub Center, or you know, being able to watch him on HBO. Not many people know much about Nieves. He's moving down to the super flyweight division to take this fight. He lost his last fight by split decision to Nikolai Potapov. So, and he's only had like two minor title fights. Actually three, because he won a vacant title and then defended it once, but then lost it. So, I think this is something where, you know, people see what Inoue can do, and then he might just get a lot of, a lot of eyes on him in this particular matchup. You know. You were also talking about this, the thing there with Chocolatito Gonzalez and, you know, him being in pound for pound list. I was looking at ESPN.com's thing there, and I think they had him still listed in the pound for pound list. I think he was like around there at like number five or something like that. What are your thoughts about that? And like, why would they, you know, still have, you know, Chocolatito Gonzalez among the pound for pound list if he's, you know, lost to Sol Rungvisai for starters? And, you know, other than the fights against Quadras and Arroyo, that he really hasn't, like, had the notable fights that, you know, people could point out to. Or the Estrada fight. Also, yeah, can't forget the Estrada fight.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he's on someone's pound-for-pound list. Like, it's the same statement that I said earlier, you know, just in different words. I said that I take it with a grain of salt. I'm paraphrasing what I said, but I take it with a grain of salt them talking about, like, how great a fighter is when they boost up a fighter, because it seems like just propaganda. And so even with people's pound-for-pound lists, as usual, you know,
you're trying to put an agenda, basically.
Yeah, you're trying to fit agenda. You see reports of Teddy Atlas selling out and maybe getting paid to every second he on TV. Lomachenko. Is the camera rolling? Lomachenko. You know, like, at some point, most people would think he was a straight shooter, but, you know, I guess you have to ask people what's their number one definition of pound for pound. And if it means that I think this is the best fighter, who has the best fighting potential, that makes them the pound-for-pound best fighter, then I guess, yeah, they can say whoever they want. But, you know, somebody need to lay out, like, what are the concrete rules.
What's the criteria?
Yeah, talking about a pound-for-pound. And in my opinion, it should be based off of past performance. It should be based off of not your potential, but actually your merits. It shouldn't be based off how great you possibly could do. It should be based off on what you actually have done. Like, because I don't know. It's too many people that we can say potentially are great. And I get it, you know, Terrence Crawford is a great, great talent. Terrence Crawford, yeah, in my mind, is better than a lot of fighters. But again, he shouldn't be compared in the same breath, not at this point in his career, he shouldn't be compared in the same breath as an Andre Ward. And when I went and thought about it, he probably shouldn't even be compared in the same breath as a Canelo. Because even though Canelo got some questionable wins, he definitely has the resume to say he is, if not the second best fighter, he's the second best fighter, pound for pound, outside of Andre Ward, because he has shown and proved that, you know, even though, yeah, some of them was close, he still you know, came out the victor, and he's fighting these people. He's fighting these, you know, people. And so for me, I compare what has everybody else done? What has everybody else done that you have fought? Like, you know, what is their record? How are the people faring that they fought? And then, you know, compare these guys. And then if we even compare that to Danny Garcia, like, I get it. Terrence Crawford is better than Danny Garcia. He's a better fighter than Danny Garcia. But as far as showing and proving, Danny Garcia, to me, I can't think of nobody else because I just thought of Canelo. Danny Garcia get took down a notch since Keith Thurman beat him. So probably Keith Thurman. And then you probably go with Danny Garcia just off of merit of who he has beat and where he's at in this point of his career. This is me basing it off of merit. Like, I get it. Terrence Crawford is better than Danny Garcia. But it would be Andre Ward, Canelo, Keith Thurman, and after that, you know, I guess it's up in the air, but what you think?
Well, I mean, my thing with it is, you know, the criteria comes up as well, but, you know, you did say, you know, how the thing with Danny Garcia and his questionable wins. I mean, you know, you had the thing there with, you know, Peterson and a couple of others there that, you know, that he's had, you know, that kind of like have you questioning, you know, what if you could put him up there. And he did. Yes, he did have that loss to Keith Thurman. So you got to take that into account with Danny Garcia. But I mean, my thing with Garcia is, yeah, he has the resume, you know, since 2011 fighting Nate Campbell, Kendall Holt, Morales. Well, I don't know about Morales, facing Morales twice when Morales was way past it.
Zab Judah, right?
Yeah, Zab Judah, Amir Khan, and, you know, the Matisse fight in September 2013. But that Mauricio Herrera fight is the one that, you know, a lot of people said that, you know, Garcia lost, but he was given that win. You know, going up against Guerrero, Ghost Guerrero, to win the vacant welterweight championship, and then, you know, the Keith Thurman fight. But, oh, and he also, you know, fought, you know, of note, Ashley Theophane, you know, back in 2010 too. So he's had, you know, a good little list of fighters in his resume up to this point. But, you know, that, you know, having the resume is one thing, and the skill level is another thing that I put into account. So that's, you know, two things that, you know, I kind of put into my list for, like, a pound for pound. So if you have the talent and you have the resume and you've beaten, you know, fighters that are, you know, of note, that have been, you know, good, very good, then you'll be put in that pound for pound list. You mentioned Canelo. I mean, Canelo, you know, has that list of fighters there where he's fought Aris Landy Lowry, he fought Austin Trout, he fought Miguel Cotto, he fought Shane Mosley, among others. So, you know, with that's why, you know, a lot of people, you know, kind of like put him high on that list. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, you have somebody like Golovkin who, you know, has been in middleweight his whole career, and the most notable fights that he's had is, you know, the Jacobs fight and the fight against, I would say, David Lemieux, which, you know, to me with that David Lemieux fight, I mean, not a lot of people knew much about David Lemieux up to that point. He did, like, lose. You know, he did lose a fight a few years earlier or something like that. And, you know, he was coming into that fight against Gennady Golovkin, just winning the WBO version of the middleweight championship. So that was his first defense of that WBO, or that actually not the WBO, but the it was that IBF middleweight championship, actually. So it's like, okay, he won the middleweight championship, and then he didn't defend it once until he fought Gennady Golovkin. So it's like, well, after that, what do you see from like a guy like a David Lemieux after that? Or you have somebody like Dominic Wade. Dominic Wade, like, nobody really knew who Dominic Wade was. He was elevated up to that number one position for, you know, one of the mandatories that Golovkin had. And then, you know, afterwards, Kell Brook, who, you know, moved up because of circumstance. And I've gone, you know, back and forth with a lot of people in reference to that fight because it was like, okay, people are saying, like, Kell Brook stepped up for that fight. And I'm like, wait a minute. Look at the resume of Kell Brook. Who in the world has he fought up to that point to fight Gennady Golovkin that said that he had any chance at all against Gennady Golovkin in that case? So, I mean, it's a lot to consider in reference to these pound for pound lists, but those two things, you know, resume and your overall skill are, you know, the two that I kind of like put above anything else. And that's why I have like, you know, likes of Andre Ward and Terrence Crawford as my top two within that pound for pound list. Like, I think it was like last year or something like that. I used to post like a pound for pound list myself, but, you know, kind of like stopped that. Maybe I'll see if I could, you know, jump off with that once again. And see if I could, you know, get more conversation going in reference to that and see how that works out. Just here in this second session here for the podcast, wanted to get into another fight that's going to be out there in the boxing world on September 9th. That's of note, and that is the start of the World Boxing Super Series in the cruiserweight division. And this is the fight that, you know, I've said many times over, is the best matchup within the World Boxing Super Series, whether it's a cruiserweight one or a super middleweight. This one here is, you know, two guys, you know, one that's had the, you know, the history behind them within the cruiserweight division, and the other guy is regarded by a lot of people as the number one guy in cruiserweight. You have Oleksandr Usyk against Marco Huck. This will be, you know, for the WBO cruiserweight championship that Usyk has. You know, it's going to be in Berlin, Germany. And I mean, I just feel like, you know, one of these guys is, you know, the best over there at cruiserweight. You know, Marco Huck is, you know, been in the cruiserweight division for a good while. He's had the WBO cruiserweight title and defended it multiple times since like 2009, you know, up to, you know, 2015. He did move up at one point in 2012 to go up against Alexander Povetkin, but lost that fight and then moved back down to the cruiserweight to defend the WBO title and, you know, held it up until that upset KO loss to Krzysztof Głowacki. But, you know, now he has the, you know, the second shot at the WBO cruiserweight championship against Oleksandr Usyk. They're 12-0 undefeated, you know, one of those, you know, Ukrainian sensations there with that, you know, the amateur background that a lot of people want to talk about. You know, Usyk had his last fight over in the MGM National Harbor. I wasn't able to catch that fight card there, but he went up and, you know, got a unanimous decision win over Michael Hunter. But this one here is going to be, I think this is going to be a test for both fighters. This is, you know, the best fighter that Oleksandr Usyk will have faced up to this point in his career. And I think that, you know, Usyk is the most talented fighter that Marco Huck will have fought in his whole career. So, I mean, this here will be something that I think it may – I mean, I lean towards Oleksandr Usyk here in this fight, but it's not going to be the gimme at all. at all. And, you know, like I was saying there, with this being the first fight in the World Boxing Super Series, that says a lot, one. And then two, for Usyk to, be there and actually pick Marco Huck to fight him first was just, something in itself there. Because, I think he had the first pick as to who he would want to fight in this cruiserweight tournament. And, picking Huck, who would be the – oh, what's that?
They pick the fighters themselves?
Yeah. Well, they had an entry of eight fighters that would enter the Super Series, but you would have four of those guys actually choosing who they would want to fight. So the thing was, Usyk was ranked number one. Murat Gassiev was ranked number two. Maris Brightus ranked number three. And Junior Dodikos was ranked number four. But the first three were able to pick who they wanted out of the other four. And Usyk was, Usyk was number one, and he picked Marco Huck. And, everybody just picked who else was out there from that other four that weren't ranked in that series. So, that was just something there where, Usyk just said, hey, let me go right up against Marco Huck as, the guy that's the, best out of the four. And so he was like, hey, either fight him now or fight him later on down the line. Because other than maybe Gassiev, I think Marco Huck would be one of the better guys in that cruiserweight division or in this tournament, so to speak.
Yeah, that's kind of G. You pick a seemingly challenge.
Yeah, so my thing is that if Usyk is able to get through this fight here with Marco Huck, I'd favor him against anybody else that's in that tournament. Even though, you have Brightus out there, that's the champion. And you have, Brightus actually beat Marco Huck in April of this year, for the when the WBC cruiserweight title was vacant. So he has a win over Marco Huck, but he's going to be going up against Mike Perez on September 30th as part of the tournament. But you have other guys there that hold titles. Murat Gassiev is another guy that's a champion. He's an IBF champion. So whoever comes out of this will be unified champion. I think there's only one other title out there that is not being, put on the line in this particular tournament there for cruiserweight. Lebedev is not part of this tournament. The WBA regular champion is, but Lebedev is not.
Does Mike Perez stand a chance with him moving down to a smaller weight class?
Against Brightus, I don't know. Brightus may be I think he may be a tough guy there for Mike Perez. Perez says moving down, moving down in weight here to the cruiserweight division. Perez was, a fairly good fighter, kind of like a pretty good fighter there in the heavyweight division. But, he has those, losses against Brian Jennings and Alexander Povetkin. And he did draw against Takam. So, Takam is a guy there that has been floating around the contender spots there in the heavyweight division. But hasn't really made any serious moves in that heavyweight division himself. So, I mean, that's pretty much like what I gathered there for Mac Perez.
That I wanted to throw out. I don't know if you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if you like were gonna mention this, but there was a report that came out that Conor McGregor had a mild concussion or something like that. And did you see that report?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it floating around. I didn't like read more into it that. He had a mild concussion, but I mean, if that was the case, then that kind of like, they said that he may have suffered a brain injury. I'm looking at this site there through MMAmania.com there where it says that. He ended up getting a minor, concussion there, but he was saying
that was someone
because they had a ringside position. Yeah, because I see like something here like where it has it on the article that said like former ringside physician Derry O'Carroll. Said that Bird seen signs of concussion or a or ataxia with dizziness and losing balance or anything there or whatever it is, and that was the reason why they he stopped the fight at the point that he did. I mean, to me, that's one thing. I just think that, one thing that could have really contributed to it was, the fact that they were using 8-ounce gloves instead of the 10-ounce gloves. Because, when you do that, your punches, the punches that you take are harder, much harder than it is with 10-ounce gloves. So I thought that was, part of a risk there. With that particular, with that particular change, especially when it was last minute. There that kind of put both fighters in danger, but especially put, McGregor in danger because he was, going into a first professional fight against Floyd Mayweather, who's, very experienced in that ring. So, I mean, that. If that was actually the case, I wouldn't be surprised about it.
I mean, you're right. The 8-ounce gloves definitely increases the risk. But I think the most important point out of all of this is it was not very many punches. Like, okay, Floyd landed a few punches, but what I'm saying mm-hmm. is there were not a lot of punches landed on Conor McGregor. There were only a few punches. Thinking of it like respectively to like other fights, it wasn't that many punches landed on this guy. And I get it, he was tired to some extent, but with just a few punches landed, that's what happened. I mean, you're right, the gloves contributed to it, but that just go to show, man. It just, it's like people say, this game, you can't play boxing. It's real. Somebody hitting you with their hand, our bodies aren't meant to be hit like that. I'll ask you this. Would a 30, 40, 50 million payday be worth you getting a concussion, though?
It is about $40 or $50 million. But he had to work to a certain level to at least get to this point. So you gotta have those fights in UFC and be able to market yourself and be the popular fighter that, you know, Conor McGregor was in order to get to this point where he's able to have a money fight against Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, Mayweather, it was, you know, able to land 170 punches, and 152 of those punches were not jabs. So, yeah, that ended up being, you know, power punches, they were saying by Mayweather were 152 punches, power punches landed by Mayweather. So that, you know, hooks, uppercuts, and, you know, crosses and all of that, that was just something there that kind of like took their toll on Conor McGregor in that sense. Another thing that, you know, I kind of like gathered over the course of the week from that particular fight, you know, the whole thing about the pay-per-view numbers floating around, you know, one thing, you know, had Dana White, you know, talking about, you know, talking about that, you know, it got 6.5 million pay-per-view buys. And I was like, that kind of stretched it very much so. Because I don't think, even though there was like a lot of people talking about it leading up to that fight, I didn't think that it was enough to where it could reach, you know, over, you know, 5 million pay-per-view buys. You know, Steven Espinoza is saying that, you know, it kind of, you know, floats around that 4 million range, you know, the low to mid 4 million range. So even if it's able to get like 4 million, that's a very, very successful fight or, you know, pay-per-view event for them. You know, with it being $99.95 and with it being, you know, fight between Mayweather and, you know, Conor McGregor, which was, you know, everybody knew was a mismatch, but, you know, you had all those fans that, you know, hated Mayweather and, you know, whatever it was, you know, still wanted to see if there was any chance that, you know, he would lose to Conor McGregor. So, you know, with that overall effect, that kind of like brought the interest that it did, because it's like you don't want to be the person that misses when Floyd Mayweather loses a fight if he loses a fight. That's kind of like, you know, the whole thing with you know, how they do the whole wrestling thing or whatever it was. And, you know, back a few years ago, you know, they had that guy, the Undertaker, that had this WrestleMania streak, and he ended up losing in the WrestleMania streak. So they're like, oh, snap, you know, the Undertaker lost. So that's the thing that, you know, people didn't want to miss here in this case, is that they didn't want to miss that moment when Floyd Mayweather loses. But he didn't lose. So, I mean, there's that.
Yeah, and I wonder how they prorated, too, like the numbers to account for the bars ordering it. Because, you know, the numbers for bars ordering it is like $30 a head or something like that, per the fire marshal capacity of the space. And so, you know, like, how do you prorate that? Because, I mean, that's a few thousand dollars right there. Say for a 100-seat place, that's $3,000, you know, dollars. Like, how you prorate that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know how they would be able to, you know, make out with that, because I mean, you have, you know, all those bars and then the people that are in the bars, but the amount of TVs that you would have to, you know, order them for. So I think they would have, like, some type of, you know, overall package to where, you know, those bars and whatever it is able to, you know, order the fight. And so that's, like, kind of, like, different how that would be, you know, arranged and whatnot. So I don't know how they get that done. All right. Just getting in here, we got about another 30 or so minutes here in the live show, on the live podcast. I wanted to get into a little bit of a couple of announcements, but a little bit later on, probably it'll be part of the overtime section of the show. But, you know, here, you know, we're talking about all the fights that were going to be happening on September 9th. But now I wanted to, you know, touch in a little bit on what's going on September 16th. You have, of course, the fight card that will be at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas with Golden Boy Promotions working with K2 Promotions in this. And you'll have the main event as the Unified Middleweight Championship with the Lineal in the Ring Middleweight Championship on the line as Gennady Golovkin takes on Saul Canelo Alvarez. There for all those middleweight titles. I don't necessarily, you know, want to mention the undercard because, I mean, you do have like a, you know, you have Diego De La Hoya being featured there against Randy Caballero. You have Jose Diaz going up against, I mean, Joseph Diaz going up against Jorge Lara. In it, but you know a lot of these fighters on a lot of these cards, especially with the Golden Boy Promotions card, you're really not going to see much as far as like a co-feature or anything like that. I kind of like put it as kind of surprising with Tom Loeffler, you know, promoting Gennady Golovkin that they couldn't have one of those fights that are happening next Saturday as part of this particular fight card. That would have, you know, that would have brought up a lot, you know, a lot more interest there in this particular undercard than what's happening there in the main event. But, I mean, to me, it seems like a lot of people, you know, around boxing circles are kind of like leaning towards Gennady Golovkin winning this particular fight. But I'm leaning towards Canelo Alvarez. I think the youth is going to be, you know, a factor. I think his, you know, overall, you know, who he's been able to be up against is going to be very key here against Gennady Golovkin. I mean, he's, like we were saying with the whole thing with the pound for pound, I mean, he's fought, you know, Austin Trout, he's fought Ruslan De Lara, he's fought Floyd Mayweather, he's fought Shane Mosley, he's fought Matthew Hatton, he's fought Miguel Cotto, among others. So he's seen a lot of fighters. He's seen a lot of styles. And the thing with Gennady Golovkin, I think he's, over the course of his career, he's kind of like been a straightforward type of fighter, you know, that's fought, you know, the way that he wants to fight, and that there hasn't been really anybody that kind of like responded to him very differently, where he's had much difficulty against him, with the exception of, you know, Willie Monroe Jr. up to, you know, a few rounds, and then that, you know, fight against Daniel Jacobs, where, you know, Daniel Jacobs, you know, was able to, you know, do what he could do in exchanges toe-to-toe. That knockdown that happened was because, you know, Jacobs was backing up, and, you know, he kind of, tripped back and couldn't keep himself up, so... You know, to me, I'm leaning towards Canelo winning this fight here against Gennady Golovkin. What do you think about what's going to happen here with Canelo and Golovkin? And also, the one other thing that's that was being mentioned or floated around was with the open workouts that it seemed like Golovkin had a little bit of weight, you know, under him. Up to that point, and so that, you know, there may be a thing where he has to cut down a little bit more here. So what's your thoughts on it?
So I think that if Canelo is at the level that I think it is, meaning that anybody will respect his power, and if he actually has learned a lot from the boxing lesson that he got from Floyd, if he can put them two things together, then I think he should be able to win the fight by boxing, and then in between the boxing, putting punches on Golovkin that'll make Golovkin respect him and doubt himself. similarly to how he was doubting himself against Jacobs, because, you know, he wasn't all gung-ho like he is on fighters that he don't respect their power with Jacobs. Like, he was hesitant, you know. He was throwing punches, but he wasn't throwing them like you sort of saw a glimpse in his character. You wondered, can he dig deep? Because people hadn't really made him have to dig deep. And so somebody said this, and I agree with them. If Canelo can keep it close in the early rounds, or at least competitive in the early rounds, then if he takes Golovkin to that point that Jacobs took him, then, and he don't fade, if his fading in stamina is less than Golovkin's fading, then he should be able to win the fight. Like, I think he has enough power to where Golovkin will respect him, but can he box? Can he, you know, box and move? And then when he actually do throw the heavy punches, will they be enough such that Golovkin can respect them? And then will he fade late in comparison to Golovkin's fading?
And I think the thing is with this particular fight, they're kind of seeing if Canelo is going to be making the mistakes of being, you know, going in the inside against Golovkin, and they're thinking he might go toe-to-toe against Golovkin. And I just don't see that. I don't see him, you know, going up there toe-to-toe against Golovkin. I think he's going to be able to use his boxing skills. And I think that the whole thing with the boxing skills is something that's underrated for Canelo. So I think that's going to be very key there against, you know, someone like Gennady Golovkin, who, you know, has had his, you know, moments where he's kind of like slipped up. I'm not going to really count that fight there against Kell Brook, because, I mean, he's going up against a welterweight. So what is a welterweight going to do? You know, what's a welterweight going to do against a middleweight? You know, so even if, you know, Brooke was able to, you know, tag Golovkin a few times here and there, he's not, you know, it's not going to be something where he's, like, taking a serious punch against him, you know. But that fight against Jacobs kind of, like, showed me, you know, where he could be, you know, slipping a little bit, especially with his movement, especially, you know, going up against guys that could, you know, really jab. Which I think that Canelo's jab is going to be a key in this fight here against, against Golovkin. That I think he's going to have to deal with Canelo's jab in that particular fight. And that's something that he's going to have to adjust to. You know, it's not like, you know, anyone has like a serious reach advantage. Neither one of them does have a serious reach advantage. So it's going to be something to where we're going to have to see if Golovkin is going to be able to move around or move his head a little bit to, you know, kind of like keep that jab away from him.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be the interesting part. And, you know, Canelo has pretty decent standing still, like, waist movement, you know. Like, he at least try to dodge punches from the waist stationarily, you know. Like, I'm not relating it to James Toney by no means, but, you know, sort of how James Toney didn't move his feet, but he could dodge punches like that. You could see Canelo making a effort to do that more.
Right. Well,
to have weight movement.
Yeah,
well,
James Toney. Yeah, James Toney just uses his guard to, block. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I think Canelo. Like, I don't know who's gonna win, but I would. I want Canelo to win. Be real about it, you know. I would have to look at their tendencies a little bit more to actually, like, straight pick what I think will happen. Because, you know, Canelo is not without his flaws either. He tires, and it just depends on who would tire faster. I think Canelo should be quicker than Golovkin, so that should bode well for him. Canelo strong, so that should bode well for him too. But, you know, Golovkin's strong, obviously. So I guess we just kind of got to see what the pot will bring out once you mix it up together.
Yeah, exactly. One other thing here with this particular fight, kind of like, you know, judging the way that people are looking at this particular fight, I'm not sure about, you know, that Mayweather-McGregor fight affecting this particular fight. I just didn't feel that enough people were really talking about, you know, Golovkin against Canelo to the point where that would kind of garner, you know, a lot of interest in, you know, it being, you know, it ending up to where, you know, a lot of people end up watching that particular fight or that particular pay-per-view. So the, you know, projected numbers, I mean, of course you have Oscar De La Hoya talking about it's going to be around, you know, 1.5 to 2 million pay-per-view buys. But I just don't, you know, I just don't see it. I mean, you do have Canelo who, you know, went up against Lil Chavez earlier this year, and that, you know, that pay-per-view kind of like reached 1 million pay-per-view buys, which, you know, wasn't expected by me because it was an absolute mismatch. But, you know, it was, you know, two Mexican fighters, two popular Mexican fighters, you know, going up against each other. So it was like, you know, that's the thing that, you know, people were trying to see what was going on in that particular fight. But, you know, here in Golovkin's case, you really don't see that much interest in Gennady Golovkin outside of, you know, a few boxing circles. So it's like, you know, when you see him, you know, going up against, you know, Daniel Jacobs or, you know, up against David Lemieux, that, you know, that overall fight thing there just didn't, you know, have much overall interest to where, you know, it's only like 150 pay-per-view buys or whatever it was for that, you know, that fight card there. So what have you been hearing in reference to this particular fight, Canelo and Golovkin? Are there people around you that are, you know, very interested in it, or are you not hearing that much?
I honestly haven't really been looking to see other people's opinions on the fight. I haven't, like, been following the blogs or the sites or anything. I haven't been very social to see what other people's comments are. But, I mean, you made a point that I guess I will speak on, is that you don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong or right on this, but you don't know if the Mayweather fight affected or will affect the Golovkin and Canelo fight, because it wasn't that much interest in anyway. Is that what you said?
Right. I mean, I haven't really, you know, heard anybody really talking that much about a Canelo Golovkin fight, you know, as much as the Mayweather McGregor fight. I mean, you know, leading up to Mayweather McGregor, I mean, I've heard it, you know, on the way to work, at work, you know, in bars, you know, leading up to the fight, you know, and you've had like various places where people, you know, go to a house to go see the fight. You know what I mean? And I hadn't really heard anything like that since, you know, Mayweather Pacquiao, you know. But, you know, those same people aren't going to be the ones that you'll see, you know, looking for Canelo versus Golovkin. You know, even though that's supposed to be a 50-50 type of fight, they're not going to be interested in it because, I mean, they don't have like anybody that they necessarily root for. One, or there isn't, you know, anybody that they say that they despise. And that's the thing with Floyd Mayweather. He was, you know, one of the most polarizing figures in sports, where a lot of people liked him and a lot of people didn't like him. And so that's why, you know, you had a lot of people, you know, everybody really going to watch his fights, whether it was, you know, in the arena or on pay-per-view, because, you know, you liked him for his skill, you disliked him for his, you know, actions inside or outside of the ring, and, you know, a lot of things that were kind of like pushed up about, you know, what he did in the ring. So I think that overall effect that, you know, Floyd Mayweather had over the, you know, last few years of his career made him to be as successful as he is. But here, only thing that's, you know, really successful is the homegrown popularity of Canelo Alvarez, you know, being from Mexico. So a lot of, you know, Mexicans, you know, kind of backed him, you know, like how a lot of Puerto Ricans backed Miguel Cotto, you know, or Tito Trinidad and, you know, other, you know, other fighters there that are from those countries. But you really don't have that coming from Gennady Golovkin, you know, being from Kazakhstan and not very well known until, you know, he started to win the belts that he was able to win, and then, you know, having that HBO backing him. So that's the thing on, you know, that particular fight, you know.
So I got a point on that fight. So one statement and two questions. So naturally, after this fight, so the boxing, like, media are very faddish. If Golovkin wins this fight, they will definitely say he's the best pound for pound. It's like after everybody fight, they say they're the best pound for pound. Like maybe next week when Chocolatito fight, they're going to say he the best, third best pound for pound. You know, after Golovkin fight, they're going to say he the best pound for pound. You know what I'm saying? They always say that. Right. But for me to you, if Golovkin wins this fight, depending on how he wins, do you say that puts him at number two pound for pound? And on, alternatively, if Canelo wins the fight, does that put him as number two? Does that solidify him as number two for pound for pound?
Ooh. Oh, man, that's a good question. For me,
so
the thing with them, now remember, the thing what I said about pound for pound, two of my overriding criterias was, you know, your overall skill level and your resume and who you beat. Now you did have that caveat on, you know, the way how, you know, how one of these fighters is going to be able to win, if that kind of like affects my list on pound for pound. I mean, to me, like, I'll put it like this with Golovkin, right? Compare his run at middleweight to Ward's run at super middleweight. I couldn't have Golovkin be up there high in the pound for pound list, you know, just for his run at middleweight, when, you know, even if he does have this win over Canelo Alvarez, it just doesn't seem like it's better than the run that Andre Ward had at super middleweight. You know, Ward was even with number two pound for pound. So if I have Ward at number one, and I have Crawford at number two, you know, Crawford was able to prove himself as the best in the super lightweight division. And he was, you know, the best over in the, you know, the division below that in 135. So, you know, at least he was able to have, you know, at least one or two defining fights where he was shown as the best in that particular weight class. Gennady Golovkin only has, like, you know, this one fight that's kind of like a, you know, high-profile fight, and then the fight against Daniel Jacobs, you know, where, you know, a lot of people thought that Daniel Jacobs won that fight. So now it's like here against against Canelo Alvarez, he's going to have to prove him. He's going to have this big money fight against somebody that, you know, that was a super welterweight champion, and then got the lineal championships because he beat Miguel Cotto, who was, you know, at the time, you know, floating around at 153 pounds or so. He just won the lineal championship from, you know, Sergio Martinez, who, you know, kind of was not in, you know, 100% when he fought Miguel Cotto. So that's where the lineage goes. Martinez to Cotto, Cotto to, you know, Canelo. And then when Canelo won that lineal middleweight title belt, he didn't necessarily really fight at middleweight. He went over to, you know, super welterweight to fight Liam Smith for that WBO belt there. So I'm not necessarily sure what Golovkin can do there. I really would have thought that Golovkin would have moved up to super middleweight, you know, when he already had, you know, most of those belts already. They're talking about, you know, he was trying to get that fight against Sergio Martinez a few years ago, but I mean, they say a lot about that particular thing, but the way that Golovkin got the world titles once he was on his way, you know, collecting them, kind of like I just wasn't really too, you know, favorable towards that, you know, because it's like, who are the guys, who are these guys that he's fighting in order to get these belts, and how are they able to be chosen to fight for either a vacant belt or, you know, be able to be the number one contender or whatever it is. You know, it's like, who did they beat in order to get to this position? So, you know, with Golovkin, I think he's still, I wouldn't put him, I still can't put him that high there. With Canelo, if he's able to get this win, then it goes up to his resume as, okay, he's the guy that beat the guy at middleweight, you know, to be the number one at middleweight. And, you know, a lot of people consider them, you know, to be number one at super welterweight, you know, up to that point to where he fought Floyd Mayweather, where he lost those super welterweight belts, because, you know, he was the guy that ended up, you know, beating Austin Trout or getting that decision against Austin Trout to win the WBA and WBC super welterweight belts. So he would have titles at super welterweight, and then would have titles at middleweight if he's able to get this win. So I would have more credit towards Canelo beating Golovkin than if Golovkin beat Canelo.
So the question is, though, if Canelo beat Golovkin, does that put him at number two pound for pound?
That's a toss up. I'd have to, you know, look at it again, you know, how that would be able to work out. So, you said number two. All right. So this is what I'm looking at here so far, with Canelo Alvarez, right? I'm looking at his resume right now, like going from like 2010 on. So he's fought like the likes of Carlos Baldemir at super welterweight, Matthew Hatton, you know, for the super welterweight title, WBC super welterweight title in 2011. Brian Rhodes, Alfonso Gomez, Kermit Cintron, Shane Mosley, Josecito Lopez, which I still don't understand why they had that fight. Austin Trout, where, you know, some people thought Austin Trout actually, you know, did better than that unanimous decision that Canelo Alvarez got. Floyd Mayweather, Alfredo Angulo, Erislandy Lara, another questionable fight. James Kirkland, Miguel Cotto, Amir Khan, Liam Smith, right? So with those, I put like weight towards the fight against Trout, the fight against Floyd, the Lara fight, and the Cotto fight.
Macklin?
In comparison to Crawford, you might have a case. You might have a point there with the thing with Crawford. You might. It's just that I kind of like see Crawford's skill, and I'm saying like, okay, we know that he's the best at 140 pounds. We know that he was the best at 135 pounds. If he moves up to 147, he would be very, very good in that particular weight class. The only thing there is that I don't see him fighting the likes of the Garcias, the Thurmans, and the Errol Spences unless Bob Arum opens the door for his fighters to fight guys that are managed by Al Haymon there. So
unless he moves promotional companies.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean,
he can't fight the guys.
I mean, look at how Miguel Cotto, you know, handled his career, you know, up to the point where he was at top rank. And then after that second fight with Antonio Margarito, you know, his top rank contract ran out. And then the very next fight he has is against Floyd Mayweather. You know, a fight that, you know, a lot of people are talking about, oh, okay, how come, you know, Cotto and Mayweather aren't able to fight each other, you know, while Cotto is pretty much at his peak there in the welterweight division and, you know, up into the super welterweight division. But then once he was able to run out of that contract there, you know, after fighting Antonio Margarito in 2011, then he was able to fight Floyd Mayweather right off the bat. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be something there that's going to, you know, kind of like have a big type of debate, is if Canelo Alvarez would be among that top two, pound for pound, if he's able to beat Gennady Golovkin. I just think it just depends on, you know, if he's able to beat Gennady Golovkin, how he's able to beat him. Especially, you know, still, you know, since a lot of people kind of still have that overall psyche that Gennady Golovkin is the boogeyman of the middleweight division. Still, you know, even though he wasn't able to, you know, knock out Daniel Jacobs and had a back and forth fight with Daniel Jacobs in that particular case there. So I'll have to see how this one turns out.
Let's say Canelo beats Golovkin the same way Andre Ward beat Kovalev in that first fight. I would still say he would be number two. I think he's number two right now. And that would legitimize his number two, even if it's a super close fight. I agree with you in that Golovkin beating Canelo does not make him number two, because he hadn't done anything up until before. I mean, Lemieux, that's nothing special, and Daniel Jacobs is only like real name he got on his resume, but. Yeah, I think Canelo beating him is a close fight, legitimizes his number two, or solidifies his legitimate number two spot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about it. I mean, I'm not certain how people will view it, but I think a lot of people, you know, buy a lot of stock into Canelo if he beats Golovkin there.
Mark my words, if Canelo beats Golovkin, everybody will be saying he's the number one pound for pound. All the, you know, the boxing media,
yeah,
and Rafael.
Well, you know ESPN will. You know they'll do it. You know they'll do it.
Yep.
You know, that'll be something right there. To see like how, you know, other people react to if he does get that win over Gennady Golovkin. I mean, if you go into Box Rec right now, right, they already have Canelo Alvarez as number one pound for pound. They're over Terrence Crawford and Andre Ward. So, I mean, so you're gonna see it more here if Canelo Alvarez gets this particular win over Gennady Golovkin. All right. Just continuing here with the boxing talk. Just got like a few minutes left here in the live session. I was just trying to see if I could like look through the schedule. I mean, I'm still like looking forward to what's going to happen in that fight card that's going to be in October over at the Barclays Center, where you have actually, you know, you have Jermell Charlo against Erickson Lubin. You have Jared Hurd against Austin Trout. And Arislan Aguilar defends his WBA super welterweight championship against Terrell Gaucher. And then over in Galveston, California, on Fox, you're going to have Leo Santa Cruz defending his super featherweight, quote-unquote super featherweight title against Chris Avalos, and Abner Maris defending the regular featherweight championship against Andres Gutierrez as they, you know, agreed to have a tune-up fight before fighting each other in a rematch for that featherweight championship in the WBA. I'm going to try to see if I can get to that fight in Showtime over in the Barclays October 14th there. Because that's a very good fight card. But one other thing that I got there from one of the fighters is that Austin Trout is in news circles because he's suing the World Boxing Organization for $40 million. And the reason why he's doing that is because for some reason the WBO took him out of the rankings, you know, without any notifications. I don't think it was something to where, you know, he fought in a different weight class or anything like that. So, you know, what happened was he was amongst the top guys in that WBO rankings there, you know, after 2014. I think he had, you know, the fights against Daniel Dawson, Rajeda, Galarza, and whatnot before that IBF super welterweight title fight against Jermall Charlo. So I think the thing is that he's saying that you can't necessarily remove me from the rankings unless I have a world championship from the other boxing organizations. And so we're going to see how that's going to turn out because there's been an instance where, you know, a boxing organization got sued before and the guy ended up getting a large settlement from the World Boxing Council. So maybe Austin Trout is able to get something through here.
Yeah, I mean that's interesting. Like you said, he hadn't. Did they say he had to fight other, or when he was fighting, was he fighting ranked opponents?
It may be that he was fighting ranked opponents here. Let's see. You said, they said the sanction body violated the boxing reform law. Let's see. I was trying to, because he requested to enter the WBO rankings and got a number 9 position. And then, like I was saying, you know, he beat Daniel Dawson, Luis Gradeja, and Luis Galarza, and Joey Hernandez, you know, in order for him to climb up to 4th place in the rankings, right? And at that time, like Miguel Cotto and Canelo Alvarez, you know, moved up to middleweight there. And then there, it just seemed like, you know, there were situations to where
Trout was going to be able to have a world title shot there for that WBO world title. And then he was, like, eliminated from the rankings and then replaced by Liam Smith. And this is before he fought, before he fought Jermall Charlo that they removed him from the rankings. So if he was still there to fight for the WBO super welterweight title, then he wouldn't have had to fight Jermall Charlo in May of last year for that IBF version of the title. So that's how that works out.
So Charlo wasn't in the IBF ranking then?
No, Charlo was the IBF, like, he was the IBF champion. But the thing was, it was that with Austin Trout, he was already, you know, fighting under the WBO rankings before that. So, like, up to, you know, 2015 into the beginning of 2016, Austin Trout was still, like, around, like, number three or number two in the WBO, and he didn't necessarily have any fight lined up. But then, you know, the WBO removed him from the rankings and replaced him with Liam Smith. And then, so as a result, Austin Trout ended up just going after, you know, Jermall Charlo for that IBF super welterweight title. So the thing is, like, with rankings, like, you could be ranked anywhere in any organization's rankings up until the point that you win a world title. Once you win a world title, you're removed from the other organization's rankings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's how that.
Martin,
so that's how all that works.
Are in multiple rankings.
Oh, what's that question?
Aren't there certain people who are in multiple rankings?
Yeah. I mean, you have, like, for example. Now I was thinking, like, you know, like a Jarrell Miller, who I've actually talked with a couple of times here over the course of a week. Jarrell Miller is ranked in the IBF. He's ranked in every boxing organization there in the heavyweight division. He's ranked 14 in the WBC, 6 in the WBA, 6 in the IBF, and 7 in the WBO. Actually, he dropped in the WBO. He was, like, as high as number 2 over there. So, you know, that's, like, you know, one example of, you know, a notable fighter there. In the light heavyweight division, I mean, you have, you know, Sergey Kovalev, because he was a multi. That's because he was, you know, former champion for multiple organizations. That's one. But, you know, also Sullivan Barrera is ranked in the WBC. He's ranked in the WBA. And he's ranked in the WBO. So there's multiple occasions where, you know, a fighter is, you know, ranked as a contender in different organizations.
Yep.
So that's how that whole thing works out. But, you know, while he's, you know, going through that whole thing with the WBO, he'll, you know, still have that fight against Jared Hurd for the IBF version of the junior middleweight title there. So Hurd will have that's going to be his first defense there. And then you have Erickson Lubin getting his title shot against Jermall Charlo for the WBC version of the 154-pound belt. So that's going to be a pretty good card. I mean, that's kind of like the same as the card that happened last year. You know, where you had, you know, the Trout versus Jermall Charlo, and then, you know, you had Jermall Charlo going up against John Jackson, and Arislandy Lara was, you know, there against Veins Matarosyan. So this is pretty much like the same type of card here, you know, with those things that are happening. So I think that's going to end up being a pretty good fight card right there.
I tell you what, if who the guy Austin Trout's facing again? What's his name?
Heard. Luke. If
Heard,
yeah, Jared Heard.
Austin Trout, I'll probably have a little bit more respect for him because I just don't see him beating Austin Trout. Like, unless Austin Trout done got old, which could possibly happen. It could happen. Trout could have gotten old. But if he hadn't gotten old, then it should be an easy win. Like, Heard don't move his head. And don't he get tired, too?
I don't know about him getting tired, but he doesn't move his head all too tough. I mean, that fight against Tony Harrison was, you know, kind of a, you know, for the first few rounds or so, it looked like it was fairly competitive, you know, on both sides. It was just that Tony Harrison just slipped up there and ended up getting himself knocked out. So,
yeah, Tony
you know, it's going to be something.
Tony Harrison, to me, was getting out first, and he was landing first. It's just that I just don't know if Tony Harrison, which one in The Wizard of Oz lacked courage, the tiger, or heart, which one lacked heart, which one lacked heart, the Tin Man?
Oh, the Tin Man lacked heart.
So he was like the Tin Man. Maybe he got courage. I ain't saying he got courage, but he got to bite down. Like, it's easy for me to say I get it. It's easy for me to say sitting on the sideline, but he got to bite down. Yeah, I know he was hurt.
I mean, like, up until that point, it was still like a close fight. They have the scorecards, like, you know, only Heard was up by a round or something like that, and then one of the scorecards had it even. So it was still, like, the fight was still in the balance.
But I've watched so Tony Harrison's other fight against Willie Nelson. He was winning early, you know, got a little fatigued, and then it just seemed like Willie Nelson was walking him down, and Heard, he started acting like the Tin Man again. And you just like wondering, like, what is dude, you know, hard at? Like, why ain't he digging deeper? And then, you know, Willie
Nelson.
Yeah,
that Harrison fight, that one was at the Sundome. Yeah, that fight.
Yeah, and he got knocked out, and I was like, wait a second. Yeah, something missing in this guy. You know, past round six, something missing. Like, let's use Canelo for a second. Canelo, okay, he gasses out. But you best believe he's still trying to knock you out with them punches. He's still trying to win in the later rounds, even with Laura. Like, Laura should have won the fight, but Canelo did not stop trying to win. Canelo made a good adjustment. He started going to Laura's body. And then, you know, like, he won the later rounds. Like, he definitely... If I'm correct, right, he won the later rounds. Like, Canelo, even though it's questionable, he made adjustments and he was trying to win the fight. You can't help just because he got, you know, the powers that be behind him. In the Austin Trout fight, he was trying to win the fight. I mean, in that one, that was a little bit more apparent, I think. Was it that he lost that fight?
What, in that Canelo Trout fight? Yeah, he was still trying to win, but even though it was like open scoring, though.
Oh, yeah, that open scoring, that was crazy. That was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That was so demoralizing. But, yeah, it's Harrison's just missing something, man. And so I feel like he should have won that fight. But then you throw Heard in there. Like, I question, like, I don't know. Heard just lack ability to me. I just think I don't know if he didn't have very much amateur experience, but technically he missing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, this is going to be a very, very difficult fight for Jared Heard here in this case, because of the way that you know, how slick that Austin Trout is. And, I mean, that was shown in this fight against Jermall Charlo. It was just that Charlo was just so big in that particular fight that, you know, whatever Charlo threw or what it was able to land it, it had much more of an effect because of his size. I have to see if Herd is going to be able to do the same things that Jermall Charlo was able to do against Trout, and I'm not sure if that's going to be the case.
What you sure is not going to be the case? I'm sorry, I was not listening totally.
With Herd being able to, you know, bully or push around Austin Trout like Jermall Charlo was able to do.
Oh, yeah, I don't anticipate that either.
You know, so, yeah, that's the thing that I'm getting off of that one. With that, I pretty much, have everything done here as far as, like, topics. Is there anything that you wanted to bring up?
Is there anything else I wanted to bring up? Nah, I don't think so. Not at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my thing. I'm just looking forward to what's going to be happening here on September the 9th. Looking at those super flyweight fights and see if I could catch Oleksandr Usyk against Marco Huck in that World Boxing Super Series thing there. But, you know, on that note, pretty much I'll put an end to this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I will have the next episode on Sunday coming up here on September 10th. You'll have the sister shows here on the Go Long Media Channel, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, and then see if we'll, you know, get a return a version of Take This L since the NFL season is going to be starting up again this week. So we're going to see if that's going to be coming up on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So be sure to be on the Go Long Media Channel to catch those. And like I said, at the end of every show, The Point of Boxing, it's a hit, and I can hit. Another standing trade. On that note, I'm out.